Let's move back to our time certain items. Item number 78, please.
Results of financial audit of the city comprehensive annual financial report for fiscal year 2014-15 and related communications.
Okay. Auditor Caballero and team. Morning.
Morning, Mayor and Commissioners. My task today is to introduce Jim Lanzarotta, a partner in the accounting firm of Moss Adams, and he's going to present the results of the most recent audit of the city's financial statements. And also with me to help respond to questions is the Director of Audit Services, Drummond Kahn. And annual financial audits of local governments are required by Oregon law. City managers and staff are responsible for preparing the financial statements. My office manages the contract for the audit. This arrangement provides Moss Adams an extra measure of independence from management, which should contribute to a higher level of confidence in the results for you and the public. Before I turn it over to Jim, I'd like to acknowledge and thank Principal Auditor Fiona Earle from my office, who is chiefly responsible for the hands-on management of the contract and the herding of the cats to get it done. And I'd also like to just take a minute to respond to a couple of questions that you had from the prior presentation and about the government standards. And I just wanted to point out that the reason why those standards are important to understand and to follow is because they allow for comparisons across the nation, of cities across the nation, because everybody's complying with those standards. And so I think that I appreciate the more nuanced presentation that you got this year about the CAFR, because I think all of that is very important information for you to consider and discuss. But when you look at the data, the way the when you're following the standards and not getting in the nuanced weeds, it allows you to look how you're doing against other cities. And so,
Auditor, I appreciate you saying that, but we also were told that very few cities have a pay-as-you-go system, so how is that helpful?
Right. So if you let me finish, I will let you know that it allows you to see big picture trends and how other cities, some cities are going up and some cities are going down, and Portland is going down. And when you're keeping company with cities we know to be troubled, like Detroit and Stockton, that should be propelling some questions about why are we going down, looking at the cities that are going up and say, what are they doing differently? And so it just allows for a bigger picture comparison.
Your view is we're keeping company with Detroit, a city that's bankrupt?
The data that we had, what was that last year, where we compared cities.
But your view is that we're keeping company, that Detroit's a peer city in terms of the financial health of our city?
Yes, that's what the data shows. But my point, the point I'm making is that it allows you to ask some questions, to look at the trend lines in comparison to other cities and ask questions. So that's why the standards are important, because it allows for that kind of analysis.
Is it your view that we should scrap our current pension plan and put in something else to address that problem? Because as long as our plan is a pay-as-you-go, we're going to have a liability with no asset. Is it your view that we should go back to the voters with a different plan for how to fund it, to change so that would have a beneficial impact on our balance sheet?
My view is that that's your decision, and what we're recommending is that you don't dismiss looking at the data based on accounting standards, and that you just use that information to ask more questions, to appreciate the context that there is something in place to bring in future revenues. And so I just wanted, when you were asking questions about the standard, I just wanted to respond to that's why we do that. And the other thing I wanted to point out is that we often make reference to the fact that the city has a AAA bond rating. And I think it's important context also to understand that only 12% of the city's bonds are AAA rated. And so that is also a more nuanced thing, and it's easy to fall into the conversation and take comfort in things when you need to know the more detailed picture. And so I just wanted to respond to those two things. And now I will turn it over to Jim Lanzarotta to give you the results of the audit.
Okay. Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor Hales. Commissioners, appreciate the opportunity to come and finish the audit process. Really, we're not quite done until we've had this communication with you. In fact, our audit standards require that we come before you and give you the results. And so appreciate the opportunity to do that. In prior years, we just did that with your bureau heads or department heads in a debrief meeting. And for the last several years, I think at the direction of your elected auditor, you've provided an opportunity for us to do this. So very much appreciate that. I was thinking earlier, I mean, Ken did such a phenomenal job, I think, of talking to you about the finances that my presentation was going to be rather boring in comparison. And actually, I think that's the way you would want it to be. So you used the word salacious, I think, at one point, and nothing salacious about the report I'm about to give you. So what I'd like to do is tell you about the nature of services you engaged us to do and tell you a little bit about what that entails. Obviously, you want to know the results of that. I think the cat's already out of the bag. You've heard a little bit about the results of the audit. But I'll give you a few more details to that. And there are some required communications in an audit, and I've met those requirements by issuing to you a written form. But I'll just hit on a couple of those points. Hopefully you've had a chance to read through that, and then maybe just a couple follow-up comments. So when I look at the city's audit, I kind of break it down into five components, and you have a pretty good understanding of the first. I mean, it's that audit, the independent audit of this document. I mean, are the numbers in here accurate? Does it have all of the requirements of the accounting standards? You heard the GASB. You've been mentioning GASB. You're making my heart flutter. You actually understand that body and its purpose. Anyway, I have to determine if you've put this together to meet all of those requirements. And not only for the city, this is the city overall, but you also engage us to do a separate report for FPD&R, so the trust fund that has that reports that pension information. Also for Portland Development Commission, so your component unit that does all the urban renewal projects. And we also do a special report for Hydro, which meets a compliance requirement with an agreement you have with PG&E. So we do all those audits. So you have an understanding of the audit, independent verification of these numbers, and so forth. A second element, though, is that we have a requirement to look at the checks and balances that management uses to make sure that they can put this together accurately, and an obligation to tell you if there are weaknesses or problems with those checks and balances. A third element is a requirement to test your compliance with certain state laws. You're an Oregon municipal corporation, and in Oregon, the state says that the auditor for you, your external auditor, will look at compliance with things like your budgeting, your ability to go through the budget process and meet the requirements, and then the administration of the prior year budget. Are you doing that? Public purchasing, insurance requirements, public deposits, how you handle your cash and investments. Those are just a few of the areas we're required to test. A fourth area, you receive a fair amount of federal awards. And with that comes a requirement for your external auditor to test for compliance, certain additional compliance requirements. So we did that. And then a fifth element I highlight just for you, because you have a pretty a dedicated and experienced accounting staff that can put this document together. So in Oregon, there's probably 1,500 or so organizations that have to file financial statements with the state. A majority of them are unable to put this document together in-house. They have to rely on their auditor. So in our case with the city, since you're able to put it together, we just do a technical review of that to make sure that your staff does that. And we also test it for the additional requirements of an award. And I don't know if that really got highlighted, but you submit this to the Government Finance Officers Association for an award, which requires that you go above and beyond the minimum requirements of GAAP and put some additional information in here. And we do a test or a review, I should say, to see if you're meeting those requirements. So that's kind of what you engaged us to do. Does that make sense so far?
It certainly does.
Okay, excellent. Well, let's talk about the results. So the main thing you want to know, of course you already heard, on page 13 is our opinion, or the start of the opinion, which is, in layman's terms, what we call a clean opinion. I think your controller, Michelle Kirby, said it was unmodified. That's the technical term. She's absolutely right. We have one additional paragraph in there that you don't always see, and it just highlights the fact that you implemented that GASB on pensions. So it still doesn't take away from the fact that it's an unmodified opinion or a clean opinion. It just highlights the fact that you had to implement that new accounting standard. So This is a point when you wish bells and whistles would go off, the balloons would fall, confetti, something, but it's a lot of effort for your crew to pull this together. You ask what was formerly known as the Office of Management and Finance to pull this together, but you've got a lot of bureaus where information resides. They've got to pull all that, a lot of funds, pull that together to meet these requirements, and they do a pretty good job of that. Now, I mentioned a requirement to look at your internal controls. So we did that work. We have to assess whether those are working, whether they're designed appropriately, and are they in fact working. And we're able to tell you that we found no deficiencies in your financial-related internal controls. And you have had some in the past, but this is really good. So your crew, if in the past when they've had some issues, have taken appropriate steps, and we're able to tell you that we did not identify any issues this year in that regard.
Can you remind us, what's a garden variety deficiency that might pop up in an audit like this?
Yeah, so gosh, there's quite a few that tend to...
Of course, not applicable to us, but to another city like Detroit.
I'd say when it comes to internal controls, the common things that you hear about are lack of segregation of duties. That's probably the most common. So you take a function like accounting for your billings for water or environmental services. Maybe the same person is responsible for doing the billing and then collecting the cash and then recording that transaction in the general ledger. That's a common one. The most errors that we see in financial statements revolve around capital assets and the inability to identify when you have acquired an asset and to get it in the books and records appropriately, or vice versa, or opposite side of that, when you get rid of an asset, are you removing it from the books? That's a real common type of error we find. So there are controls around the communication that has to happen between the different bureaus and the accounting or department heads and accounting to get
that.
And
so those are examples of deficiencies where there could be a technical violation of a rule about who does what and how it's done, even if there's no finding that there's an adverse impact on the budget.
So the issue with a control, you could still get to the right answer at the end of the day, but your procedures maybe are not adequate to identify an error timely. You know, oftentimes when the auditor comes in, we'll identify an error, and management will make an appropriate correction so the financials can get to the right ending result, and you can still have control deficiencies that have to be reported. So I just gave you a couple examples of deficiencies that might occur or are fairly common. Is that okay?
Or helpful, yeah.
Okay. Let's see. Now, I mentioned also the requirement to look at state laws. And again, this year, we found no violations with the 7 or 8 areas that we're required to test. And that also strikes me because one of the most common violations we find are over expenditures against your appropriated budget. And you have so many funds, you have bureaus, you have departments, you have a lot of people who are involved in the process of monitoring against your budget. To have no over expenditures, that's pretty amazing. I don't know if we had anyone else this year amongst our client base that can say that. Also in public purchasing, in the handling of your cash and investments, those other areas that we were required to test, again, no violations of state laws were identified. In the area of federal grants, so the city received, or I should say expended, about $36.5 million this last year of federal awards. So these are grants that come to the city. Of what you received, you spent $36.5 million. So we're required to test your compliance. There could be up to 14 different types of compliance requirements associated with any one of those grants, like who's eligible to receive that, what are the eligible activities or expenditures to that grant, those sorts of things. What's the reporting that you need to do to the state or other federal agencies? And again, no findings of noncompliance. So that's a phenomenal result. You've had some findings in prior years, and whatever the issues were, your staff adequately addressed those. So this year, no findings. What's nice about having no findings as well is that if you can manage that 2 years in a row, you can achieve what's called a low-risk auditee status. And the city has a low-risk auditee status. So what that does is it enables us to test fewer grant programs to meet the single audit requirements. That saves you some dollars as well. So we only had to look at two major programs this year. In prior years, we've looked historically at about six or seven. Between five and eight is the norm. So that's good news to you. Okay, required, almost done. Required communications, again, I've issued a letter to you, but I wanted to hit on a couple things that you might be interested in. So I think Michelle mentioned to your controller about the timing of things, and that is a pretty phenomenal improvement on your part. There have been times when the city actually hasn't even been able to hit the December 31st deadline. We went into January. You moved it up to December 1 this year. I guess the other thing that strikes me about that is that you have a renew of Ken Rust here, new as CFO perhaps, or with that title, but back, so a transition there, and a transition with your controller. So you've got some transitions of some key players in this process, and you are still able to get this done faster. So a little bit of a renewed process to get the books closed and facilitate our audit process. Of our client base, I think you were one of the few, if maybe the only one, that was able to issue sooner this year than last year. So this new GASB standard on pensions was a tough issue for our clients, and so was just turnover of experienced people. So you had some turnover, but you got some quality people in here that enabled you to actually beat your timeline. So a pretty good result there. Boards often want to know, gosh, did we find any errors in the financials that required management to make adjustments? And we did not find any errors that were significant enough that we had to ask management to make adjustments. Sometimes we find errors and they're immaterial, so we can agree to not have that corrected. And really, there were no errors of that kind. Your staff completed a project based on some control deficiencies in prior years over capital assets. I don't know if you go back a couple years, we identified that you had some properties, a lot of them were donated perhaps, and never added to your capital asset records. And we recommended that you go through an evaluation of what you have recorded against what all the county assessors say you own. And just to give you an example, Parks and Rec went through that process, given the volume of properties and their capacity of time, took a while for them to finish it. But they, in this year, finally finished that project and were able to get the properties recorded. So you had a few properties that got recorded in this fiscal year that really were acquired in prior years. But by the end of the year now, we're fairly confident that you've captured them all. So really, no audit adjustments and really no past adjustments that we're aware of at this time. Another thing that boards want to know is, gosh, did we have difficulties in the process, disagreements with management? You know, were they evasive when we asked questions? Were they not providing documents? Those kinds of things. And I'm happy to tell you that none of that occurred. I think your crew understand the importance of the audit process, and they want to get us in and out as fast as they can. I would say that we've had some spirited discussions, but they've all been healthy and would be deemed appropriate in my eyes. So no disagreements, no particular difficulties encountered. If anything, it was probably a challenge for us to keep up with the pace of your staff so that we could help you meet your deadline of December 1st. And I'm pleased with my team that they were able to change how we scheduled the work so that we could help you accomplish that goal. We'll have that challenge again as you move it up another 2 weeks this year. But again, I'm confident that we'll be able to rise to the challenge on our end to help you meet that timeline. Really, the last thing I would say is that, you know, Ken already went through an analysis of your net position. I guess I'd be happy to answer any questions for my position. I could talk a little bit more about GASB 68, what I understand the intent of it. In that letter, I did give you kind of an idea of the big elements that drove the decline in net position this last year, and Ken kind of went through that. So
can I jump on that?
Please.
I'd like to get your opinion. And I, yeah. I hope that none of the questions from the council were interpreted as being dismissive of the GASB or the rule. We're just trying to understand it.
Yeah.
And when we're told that it allows us to compare ourselves to other cities, and yet we have a uniquely different way of running our pension than other cities,
right,
we're trying to figure out what is the comparison that's meaningful. So let me ask you the question.
Sure.
You seem to be giving us a thumbs up in terms of the audit. So that's how we manage money. That's encouraging. This is your, what, fifth, sixth, seventh?
Yeah, actually longer than that.
Unless, so yes. My entire service on the council, you've been presenting, and you haven't always been as gracious, so I are as positive. There have been some dings along the way. But you're talking about how we manage money and our systems. Very important. We had a presentation on the CAFR and our sort of long-term trends. I'm trying to reconcile a couple of things. So on the long-term fiscal health, FPD&R gets two greens, and the trends are going in the right direction. Under GASB and how it impacts what you call our net asset position, we're learning a lot today, 75% of the change in our position is attributed to a rule which requires us to book a liability for which we have no corresponding asset, even though that's the way our system is structured, is pay as you go. So what guidance do you have for us? Is because I'm trying to figure out whether that means our pension system under the federal rules is no longer appropriate for the times and has to be changed, mm-hmm, or if we need to put a footnote on our net asset position to clarify that unlike other cities that pre-fund their pension liabilities, we don't, and so it's going to have a negative effect on our balance sheet.
Wow, loaded question. I'm on the hot seat. I can feel it. The electricity is growing. Let me try to make maybe three points that might help answer your question. The first thing that I want to make clear is that the audit and the audit opinion is really about the accuracy of this document. Have you met all the bells and whistles? You can be on a, you can be, and I hate to use the term Detroit, but you could be a Detroit and still get a clean opinion on the financials if it is put together correctly. So first of all, the audit is designed toward whether you're doing your books and records accurate, you're meeting the accounting standards. It does not address efficiency, effectiveness, are your financial policies sound, and so forth. So to make that distinction. The second thing would probably be that GASB 68, I think the comments were made pretty effectively before there, the intent is transparency. The issue is that when it comes to payroll, you don't get into trouble too much. An employee works a month. You hand them a paycheck. At the end of that month, you're square. You've paid for the benefit of that service. But you have other benefits that you offer. You incur the cost, but you don't pay for that right away. A typical employee might be here for 15 years, and it's still another 20 years before they get a payout under that benefit that you've offered them. The accounting standard is trying to put together when the cost is incurred. Who cares when the check is cut? Your employee worked this year. They earned another set of benefits under the pension plan. So we need to recognize that cost this year and then measure it against the revenues that you brought in to determine if you're covering that cost. So the accounting standard is really trying to improve comparability amongst governments that have pensions to make sure that all the cost is being recognized right now, no matter when you fund it. The other thing is that it ought to be easier for a reader to understand if you have funded your pension system. And Ken mentioned it pretty well. I mean, obviously, if you maybe could have gone back when FPD&R was first begun, when you offered that benefit, you identified the property taxes. If you would have gone back knowing what we know today, you probably would have asked the voters to allow you to fund it closer to when the cost was incurred. So that would be a second point. The third point, which I think Ken has you on an excellent path to understand, is you may be where you are today, but what you really want to do is look forward. Can you provide services? Do you have the cash flow? Do you have the check when the time comes to cut it? you have the resources to cover that check, that's where your focus ought to be. So you have this dedicated property tax. Provide that it comes in as necessary, you'll always have the cash to cut that check. And so as long as you're getting the help from Ken and his team to understand if you have the cash when the checks have to be cut, and you can plan in advance for that, then I think you'll be fine.
I guess one of the challenges in how we talk about this publicly is, thanks to Commissioner Saltzman, the mayor, and others, over time there have been some reforms of FPD&R, which have put it on more solid footing. I'm seeing Drummond nod for the record. It's a closed system, and we've been trying to make it more sustainable, and I think we all agree we've made strides. Through an accounting rule, we have to show a liability with no corresponding asset, even though the flow of money to pay for the out year costs is secure by law through a property tax mechanism. It's just a different way in which, you know, a long time ago the citizens of Portland set this thing up.
Right.
But it's not like overnight our balance sheet became toxic. It's just that we don't have a corresponding asset to book with the liability. Isn't that right?
Yeah. And what I would say, a couple other points too, is I'll probably lose my train of thought. You've made the comment a couple times, so I think it's worthy to point out that you did make a change. The council made a change back in 2006, if I remember, and it is a closed plan. So no new fire and police employees are going into that. They're going into Oregon PERS, and you are funding that on an actuarial basis, which tries to measure a better approximation of the cost that's incurred each year. You're actually funding that right now. So your issue with FPD&R is all the folks that were hired prior to 2006 and making sure that we have sufficient cash flow to fund the checks when they retire. So you have solved the issue now. So you're funding all the folks hired after 2006 on a more sound basis. So it's the risk of those hired prior to 2006. The thing that you've asked of management and they're doing is they periodically go out and get a projection of the property taxes, and I think they go out 40 years, if I remember right. It's a 40-year evaluation, and they run the risk. What's the risk that your assessed value and the property taxes that come in will be insufficient to meet the obligation? And that's a phenomenal tool to you. So I think I don't think it's done every year, but it's probably every 2 years, and I think you're on the heels of getting one, or you just got one, or so you have one recent one. I don't know the recent results. The one prior to that, I think there was less than a 5% chance, or a 5% of all the possible scenarios that you looked at where you would run short sometime in the future. So to me, doing that type of analysis will help you understand if FPD&R is a problem. And the other thing I like about it, you're going out 40 years. If you see the risk, or maybe the risk jumps higher than 5%, 10%, whatever, if it becomes a greater risk that some scenario could result where you'd be short, and you can see that in advance, you could start building a reserve fund. You could take steps now.
Right.
To maybe cover that risk.
And that's the caution flag.
Correct.
That's the caution
yes.
flag, different than we're headed to Armageddon. That's a risk factor. And you're right. The plan, the fund does do that assessment looking out 40 years. Drummond, what do you want to add?
Well, there's another big piece here, which is the declining assets. So we've been talking a lot about FPDR. City has two big pension obligations in the future, FPDR and PERS. We also have declining assets. Streets, pipes, et cetera. As those decline, those impact this net asset number too. Another concern is that
is that already part of the 25%? Or you're talking, so 75% of the current change, given the GASB rule, is attributed to FPD&R.
Right.
Are you within the 25%, or are you forecasting future changes?
We can even do better. We can look back before the new GASB rule came into effect. So in other words, if we look back to 2006, the city had net assets of about $1.3 billion. today, with GASB 68 recognized, we're in the hole about $1.2 billion, meaning we went from 1.3 above the line to 1.2 below the line.
And the 1.2 below the line is exclusively attributed to a changing in how we book FPDNR.
A big piece of it
100%, because it's right. $1.264 million is FPDNR. So we would be in the green, not the black, if it wasn't for GASB.
Right.
And how we report that amount.
Well, but the year before that rule went into effect, in other words, excluding the FPDR GASB recognition, our net assets had declined up until 2013 down to about $350 million, meaning that even without that new recognition of the future pension problem or pension obligation, we went from $1.2, $1.3 billion to $300 million from pensions as part of it, but assets as well as the city's costs exceeding the revenues that it brought in. So it's not just GASB and it's not just pensions. It reflects kind of the accretion of all of these other decisions around revenues versus costs as well as the asset decline.
So that's why you look at it as a trend over
right.
a period of time,
correct.
Not necessarily the particular snapshot of
right.
a year.
Exactly.
Because GASB does, unfortunately, distorts our books a little bit because the way we fund our pensions different. But you're looking at a trend line.
Correct. And we would agree our report from last June on these trends, we call it Portland's Fiscal Sustainability and Financial Condition, we would agree with virtually all of Ken's comments about the long-term concerns and risks. In fact, we published a similar page in this report that talked about that. So there's really no debate over the core issues of how do we manage costs versus expenses? How do we, not necessarily how do we financially treat pensions, but how do we manage them as Jim and Ken talked about? But that's our concern. And there's generally good news. We have generally on a strong footing. Tax revenue looks terrific, but costs still continue to exceed, the costs exceed the revenues that we're bringing in.
You know, you serve, I think, as the head of some national body, so you get to talk to peers in other cities. Where do we stack up?
Well, this is one of our concerns. When we compare our net assets to six comparable cities, and we can, of course, discuss whether these are the exact correct six cities, but six that we've compared to in the past, our net position is declining. Those six cities have a fairly flat net position. The difference is not very big, but the difference essentially is that their expenses are essentially the same as their costs. Our revenues. Our revenues are just a little bit less than our expenses. And it's part of that accretion that leads to that difference to go from the $1.2 billion to the $3 billion.
Can you generalize as to whether the biggest factor in this difference is personal service contracts versus prepaying for, how we pay for capital improvements?
They're all different. In our report, we talk about how other cities break down their expenses. But I think it's multiple factors, and part of it is just how do we manage those revenues and costs to be just a little bit closer to be more like the six other comparable cities.
Thank you.
Okay. Other questions, other points that you want
well,
to
just
with?
The other, just again, showing some appreciation. I think Mayor Hales commissioned a study some time ago about the looking at the structure of OMF, and I don't know if the question of whether to have a CFO or not was directly related to that, but clearly there, that was on the tertiary of that, and we got asked some questions in that regard about our viewpoint on that, and when the possible job description of the CFO, there was a lot about, hey, helping us with the long-term sustainability initiatives. And gosh, that's just, you got an example today, I think, of the benefits. So I'm very appreciative of the study that Mayor Hales commissioned. And it appears to me you've implemented a lot of the recommendations. And I think you're seeing the benefit of that because that's the type of analysis and getting on the front end of it. I mean, really, pensions, how you account for them, all of that is noise. What you want to do is make sure you got the cash to do what you want to do when you need the cash. That's what we're worried about. And the net position is a trend. I mean, it's informative into the extent that your policies enable that trend to continue. If your policies identify the issue and when cash flow becomes a problem and you can get ahead of it, then you're fine. And that's the type of thing that I just witnessed today, that you're getting that type of reporting, and I have every confidence that you're going to continue to get that kind of reporting. And now, I think that the additional challenge is taking, Ken, I think, came up with 3 points or 3 ideas that would influence you and your budget. The additional challenge is really getting down even more detailed about what does that mean and how you act differently. And as long as you guys get there in enough time, you're going to be fine. But this is a great start to that process. So
it's good to hear. That's great. Yeah. Thank you, Jim. Thank you. Well, any other questions for our auditor or our outside auditor as well? Well, thank you all very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Excellent presentation. Anyone want to speak on this item?
Oh, one? Mr.
Okay.
Lightning.
A couple? Come on up, please. Go ahead, Lightning. I think you'll be first.
My name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Watchdog PDX. One of the biggest concerns I've had on this issue is that, in my opinion, I think the city of Portland is doing too much land banking. And why I say that is that I think we have a lot of properties out there that has been stated that, number one, have been donated, have not been transferred to the city. Number two, we've had numerous properties that have sit idle for many, many years and have done nothing but run up deferred maintenance. And there's a tremendous amount of cost to that, to have these properties sitting empty, running up deferred maintenance. And what I've always wanted to see, and I know we're talking to the accountants here, is that, and the auditors, is that I want to see a real detailed list of the capital assets of the city of Portland. And when I say that is I want to know when they were purchased, how much they were purchased for, what their current value is now, and have a clear understanding on what the city owns. And that pertains to everything from the brownfields to when we call certain properties surplus and decide to sell these properties. I want to have a clear understanding on what the current capital assets are. And the reason being is that when we say that we need cash to provide more services, if we have a tremendous amount of real estate, which we do, the city controls, then let's not be land bankers and let's convert that into cash and begin to provide more services with this funding, because we need to have a clear understanding on why we're holding on to some of these capital assets, plain and simple. If we're holding on to them for, say, 10-plus years, and we've done nothing with that property, we need to have a clear understanding why we're doing that. Because, again, we're not receiving tax revenue off that, which, of course, has been stated that's very important on the pensions. We're not doing anything to add more value to these properties, but we're holding on to them. And I want to have a closer audit on all real estate that is controlled by the city of Portland. And I want to have understanding how long we've owned it, what the intent to do with this property is, and if not, possibly put it up for sale, convert it into cash, and to start buying down some of this debt. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Morning.
Still, almost. Good morning, Commissioners. For the record, my name is Charles Johnson. And I hope that in your future informal conversations with people who participate in the city budget process, that you'll take into consideration what Mr. Lightning just mentioned about deferred maintenance and expenses that are coming into our heads, so that we can have a more vibrant conversation, including the auditor and our citizens, about where have we cut corners or saved because of financial contingency. And how are we going to keep the city robust and address these issues in a number of ways, far beyond just the concerns for street fees and gas taxes? With this particular report, the audit report runs over 400-some pages. And I just think that we'd be in a better position if you and Auditor Hall Caballero have public forum time where people engage with this. In the past, there was a people's budget program, many people who participate in the city's project, and you know, as Commissioner Fish raised, there are metrics and charts. I think, I don't know if Auditor Hall Caballero's staff specifically abstained from bringing us some PowerPoints so we could have scary charts that make us look like Detroit. But I think that there may be a place for that level of engagement. Thanks, y'all.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Okay, is there a motion to accept the report?
So moved.
Second.
Discussion. Vote, please.
Fritz.
Thanks again to Jim Lanzarotta of Moss Adams for the report, and thank you for all of the city staff as you're going through it. It's not just the management, Office of Management Finance, it's all the bureaus who are helping to report. So I specifically want to thank Kia Selly and Jeff Schaefer in Parks. Kia is the asset manager. I really appreciate her work getting everything documented. Michael Kirsten and Amy Archer in the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. And then I'm sure that Christine Moody in Procurement Services and Andrew Scott in the City Budget Office must have had something to do with gathering the data and making sure that we're doing things correctly. It's really good to have a Chief Financial Officer who's in charge of looking over this. And finally, thank you so much to Auditor Mary Hall Caballero for a very clear report and for looking at the data and telling you like it is. Aye.
Fish.
Thanks, Jim and team. So this is the seventh or eighth that I've had the privilege of hearing, and to be told we have a clean opinion and then to go through all the subcategories and tell us that we're in good standing is really heartening. And I know, having served at Parks and Housing before, that to have no deficiencies and to have all the money tracked from all the different accounts is a huge undertaking. So I would congratulate city staff for being diligent in managing public dollars. But I also thank you, Jim, for the professionalism you bring to this and the perspective. And I'm pleased to vote aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Novick.
I hereby incorporate my colleague's previous remarks. Aye.
Hales.
This is huge positive news that I do not expect to see on the front page of any newspaper. Well done. Aye. Thank you very much. Okay, let's move.